Hello and welcome. Roni's Own Media and Roni'sOwn.com proudly present the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. Your hosts are Jeff and Colleen Roni from Orange County, California. And now, on with the show. Hi there. There are a number of ways that you can stay connected and interact with the show. Our main website address is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our Twitter name is OUAT Podcast. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/OUAT Podcast. Our email address is feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com.
Hello, everyone. This is the Further Discussions podcast episode for The Miller's Daughter. This is Saturday, March 16th, 2013, I think.
That is correct.
So we are going to dive into a couple of things. We did just rewatch the episode, and we did jot some things down, but we're just going to focus on some things that really kind of struck us.
Right.
I really feel that our first thoughts kind of hit a lot of the high points of the episode, so I don't think we need to kind of
rehash
or rediscuss. So,
right.
Cora was really a smart aleck to Henry. And when she came to the ball and she put on the mask and all that.
Well, before she put on the mask, I very much saw a very nervous girl who wanted to be there. She wanted to be a part of it. She wanted to be better than she was because she knew she was just a Miller's daughter. But she was very stilted and very nervous and unsure of herself. And then she put on the mask, and that kind of gave her a little more of a confidence, I guess.
Yep. The other thing I really wanted to talk about was the whole straw thing. So we did a little research.
Yes.
And the grain in which is milled, which create flour from.
Yeah, they refer to it as cereal grains. So like rice, wheat, rye, those types of grains.
Straw is actually part of the plant.
Right.
That needs to be pummeled or threshed or crushed or...
It's basically the leftovers after the actual grain and the chaff have been winnowed away.
Right.
So straw is like, it's a leftover.
Yeah.
It's not important. It doesn't play a really big part as far as the value of the plant itself comes from the grain.
Yeah.
The chaff is also throwaway, but the straw, on the other hand, also has other uses.
Yeah, animals eat it, and it's used for bricks and things.
Right. So it's mixed with clay and concrete to make bricks. So that's a very common use in certain cultures, and even just the bales of straw can be used as insulation. So
it's used, but when people look at it, it looks kind of it's a lowly use,
right?
And you know that's part of what is part of this episode is being validated. Am I worth something?
Right.
Am I good enough? And so that's a theme that kind of runs through this episode. And it was interesting that in the Rumpelstiltskin story and in this episode, she said, you know, over and over and over, King Xavier kept saying, you know, the mill is still with you. You know, you have straw on your dress. You know, that's all you are as a miller's daughter and all that. And the trick that she set up was saying, I'll take this straw and turn it into gold, which gold is useful.
Well,
it was the currency
of
these kingdoms. James's kingdom needed it. George's kingdom needed it. So it's very important.
Right. Midas. had the golden touch.
Right. Mm-hmm. The interesting side note was that the Giants didn't care a thing about gold.
Right.
They had it all in this big room, and they didn't really care. It was land, and it was things that were living, plants.
Right. Okay.
But let's come back to this episode. So the validation part is if straw represented you and you can make that as gold, then you could be and are worth more with this process.
Right.
If it's just straw, it can be thrown away or the wind can blow it away or whatever. But to validate it is saying I can be made into something special. And that was one of the comments that she made to the king. But I'm so much more.
Right. I'm so much more than this. Yeah.
Right. So, and that's a recurring theme, validation. We'll get to kind of more of that as we go. So, why wasn't Cora queen? And she was fifth in line.
Yeah.
And then Colleen asked, well, who were the other five?
Yeah. Who were the other four in front of her? Yeah, five, who is in front of her? I mean, we didn't see a queen at that point in time. We didn't see a queen. So you have King Xavier. He'd be number one, right? Theoretically. Right.
Yep.
Then Henry would be number two. But then who else is in front of her?
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't, to me, that doesn't make any sense.
Unless it was other regions in the area. And I don't know how things are set up.
Yeah.
Like that. Just, so
it didn't seem right to me that she was fifth in line. But anyway. Yep.
So I think Gold lied about the dagger. Because he said it hasn't left my possession in, you know, centuries.
Well, wait a minute, though. It technically is kind of true. Doesn't he own the library? Because he gave Belle the key.
Well, okay. That's, yeah, but it...
He owned the town. Well, okay. Remember, Granny said he pretty much practically owns the whole town?
I still am sliding out my opinion that he lied. And I think it was either he was trying to throw them off, and then they thought maybe... You know, maybe he wanted people to think that wasn't the real dagger, but obviously it was. So,
it was, but yeah. but my question, my thinking is, my point is he's all about semantics.
Right.
His possession is the library. He owns the library.
Fair enough. Okay.
It hasn't left his possession in years.
Yeah, and he's a word guy. He's a lawyerly guy.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, we got a great tweet from a great listener about Mary Margaret feeling like Hook feels.
Understanding how Hook feels, right. Yes. Yeah, and I have to say, I didn't even think about that. I think after the initial shock of what she's done has worn off, I think that Mary Margaret may kind of feel that she is now just as bad as Hook.
Mm-hmm.
Because she, you know, you're right. This isn't me. That's what she said at the end. This isn't me. And it's true because that was not typically, but although she was ready to do it when she was a little girl.
Right.
And then her mother's words stopped her. So, yeah, I think that's real interesting though. An interesting concept to think about. Hey, now she understands how, and what I said was, I think too, the fact that, okay, so yeah, Snow White typically wouldn't have behaved like that. That's, you know, I mean, David even said, you have the purest heart of anyone I know. And she does. But at the same time, she's been living in our world for so long that I think she kind of has reconciled to the fact that life is not a fairy tale. And everything's not perfect. And that, you know what, sometimes things happen and you do things, you make choices. And so I think she'll eventually reconcile the fact that she did what she had to do, which is what David told her in the first place. We have to do what needs to be done to protect our family, basically. And she said, you're absolutely right. He wasn't referring to killing Cora. He was referring to, you know, justice and what have you. But Mary Margaret didn't see it that way. She saw it as, I got to go kill Cora.
Yep.
So that whole, if you think about it, it's kind of interesting. This kind of ties back to when she was ready to, I'm going to go kill the queen. Well, this is basically fulfilling what she intended to do with Regina a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, Henry Jr., Emma, Regina, and Neil's son, always had this way of kind of speaking words to encourage the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wonder if this isn't an encouragement or if it was a prophecy. It kind of hit me as a, I don't know, when Henry said, "You'll stop Cora. You won't let her get away."
Right.
And he was talking to Emma, and then you noticed that Gold was looking right at Mary Margaret when he spoke to, or at least in the timeline place of talking to Emma,
mm-hmm.
"We're relying on you," but he was looking straight at Mary Margaret.
But he was looking right at Mary Margaret.
Right.
So I think that, you know, there is, yeah, there is something to that, because again, Gold sees the future.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew that was going to happen.
Yep.
And you know him, he loves the irony. He thought it was hilarious that the future's full of irony.
Yeah. About being Snow White, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Of course, saying that, yeah, she had, yeah, Snow White. So when Rumpel said, "Cora sounds like breaking," and Cora means heart.
Cora has roots in, you know, corazón, Spanish. Corazón, right. Is heart in Spanish. So yeah, I mean, that just, it was an interesting choice of words that he said her name's not a very pretty name. Sounds like something's breaking. That's kind of funny and ironic.
And it ended up, his heart was broken. And then Cora's
hers
too as well.
Hers, yeah, too.
Yeah. I did not notice any. Normally, when Rumpelstiltskin unfurled contracts, I noticed pink dust kind of flying off when it appeared and when it unrolled. And when he initially unrolled this contract for Cora, it did not have that. But when the contract was updated, it did.
Yeah. So I don't know what the whole deal.
And then
was
when he pulled out the quill, it was right before he pulled out the quill, it kind of had this little shimmer change to,
mm-hmm,
it.
Yeah.
So, okay.
In that scene.
Right.
And I pointed this out, and this is something that struck me. His manner of speaking, very, mm-hmm, very different.
True.
Than the regular impish Rumpelstiltskin we're used to.
It was more goldish, and it was more quieter tones and not so.
It was very throaty, very, right, flirty, very sexy. There was just a lot of that going on there, and it kind of made me think, did he fall in love with her at first sight? I mean, he obviously found her attractive and appealing, but I think what really prompted him to fall in love with her was that whole bloodlust. When she said that,
well,
that was
and,
the key.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. I know you're going to talk about that in a minute, but I just want to point out that's when I think he fell in love with her. But anyway, go ahead.
So, Cora, okay. So if you watched Once Upon a Time for a while, you'll realize that there's a little exchange between Gold and Regina in his pawn shop when he said the art of the deal.
Yes.
And the fine point
of
contracts of a deal, mm-hmm, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So that interests Gold.
Oh, very much appeals to him.
Not anybody else. Because most everyone that he's ever dealt with is in a tight spot and they need a way out. And, right, he has a way out.
Yep.
And a contract to lock them in or a deal. And Cora is one of those few people that actually kind of dealt back with him and adjusted the contract. I mean, play one other person, but she was encouraged to, was Ella, to kind of change the deal.
Yeah, yeah.
For the twins and all that. The twins that did not exist. And so because Cora was a dealer that was actively involved in it, that, for lack of a better term, turned him on. Now, let me say this. Is when two people really start to talk and get to know each other, there's this kind of soul bearing thing that happens. And because when you first talk to anybody, you're kind of guarded. I don't think anyone is really just kind of completely open. There's very few people that are like that because the world kind of jades you and you protect yourself.
Right.
You've been hurt or whatever. But it was interesting that it was a pretty fast relationship, I would say, mm-hmm, that Rumpel and Cora had. And when she started to kind of show her true dealing colors, he connected with it, and there was fireworks. And, you know, we talked about the whole kind of lusty edge of it. But on the other hand, too, there's this connection. You know, when you talk to somebody, and, you know, when I was divorced, I did some dating. And when you meet somebody for the first time, it's just kind of like you talk about the weather. And there's certain things that someone else is just sort of like you. And you go, man, can I deal with that? I don't know. But then there's certain things that, you're exactly alike, or at least you recognize the other person and there's this connection. And that's what happened. It was just so, you know, it's a, everybody's different. And there's certain things that are kind of deep in people. And when you have a connection with somebody else, it's really cool. And the sparks fly, and like you and I, you know, who knew? I mean, it's the, sometimes it's the funniest little things. Like I was playing level 42 and you go, I love level 42. Now that's a band, whatever, but it's just, there's certain things where you enjoy and the other person enjoys it. And there's like this commonality.
Right, right. But there has to be more than that. And that's the whole point, I think, with Rumpel and with Cora. Their paths, their goals in life were very different. And that's, I think, the key. You, yes, when you connect with somebody, yeah, there's a spark and there's a definite, you know, almost lustful quality in a lot of, in most cases when you first have that first connection, but there's got to be something deeper. And that's why I don't think that it worked out with them, is because they had very different plans for their lives. And while Rumpel kind of knew what was going to happen, it was kind of one of those things. It's kind of like, well, how do you get around the fact that he sees the future? So he had to know this was going to happen.
I think the band thing was a, it didn't help me explaining, but the thing I realize is that when they started really sharing these deep, dark, and to a lot of people, it was pretty gross, you know, they were bearing their soul and telling things that they probably would never tell another human being about exactly what Rumpelstiltskin wanted to do with that guy that made him kiss his boot in front of his son. Just the whole throat thing and all this kind of stuff. But he was telling her this. That really kind of resonated with her. And she goes, you know what? You know, he asked her, what do you want them to do? I want them to bow before me and their knees to crack on the floor and all this kind of stuff. And it started to kind of match this soul bearing that normally you don't tell another person. And he did. And then she started to, and then they realized that it was this simpatico thing. They were just the same in this situation. And that's when the, you know,
The attraction
started.
The attraction started for both of them because she recognized power in him. She recognized that that's what she wanted, because again, she wanted to bring herself to a station higher than straw. She wanted to be more than straw. She wanted to be gold. How do you get to be gold? Well, gold is power. Power is everything, right? So that's why I think she, you know, fed into his thing. She wanted to know what his thing was, because I think she was trying to test to see just how connected can we get? Because if the king is powerful, but he can't produce gold. And Rumpel can, gold is power, right?
And even more than that is, she didn't want to bow to Rumpel either, in that she didn't say, do this for me and I'll, you know, be your little minion or whatever. She said, no, no, no. Teach me. I want to know you, what you do. So show me so I can do it. And so you have, again, this, you know, teacher student type of thing. But it's a power because she's taking it from him instead of him kind of hoarding it and holding on to it. And that's kind of a, that's an attraction as well.
There's an appeal to that.
It's someone that actually cares enough about you, about a gift that you have. Teach me.
You know, and that does, again, that fuels that initial, it's kind of like when you turn on a gas stove, the initial flare up, That's yep. totally what that was. And then if you're lucky, things will calm down to a simmer and there's still that heat there. But sometimes that doesn't happen. Now, like, and you use the example of the music. That was one little teeny tiny little piece. There were several things that kind of appealed to sure. each of us about the other.
Right.
But when we got down to the point where you were about to propose, you and I had a conversation about what do we want out of life? And our plans for life, our thoughts, mm-hmm. everything lined up.
Right.
And that's why it worked, is because we were on the same page. It wasn't like we had a few things in common and it seemed like, well, let's just, you know, let's run with that. It was, we had the same goals. We had the same desires and right. the same wishes. And we were very, very, very compatible. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it, you know, that's why we have lasted as long as we have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Almost 15 years. It doesn't sound like very long for, I'm sure, some people who've been, you know, together with their spouse or significant other for longer, but that's a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I think it's, you know, important to just kind of understand that I think the reason why Rumpel and Cora didn't work as well as they could have, they had that hot, passionate flame at the first, but the problem is they were on two different paths. And
yeah.
what Cora wanted was power, mm-hmm. and Rumpel had it and didn't right. want to give it up.
Now, that's a great point, is that they had different goals, and that's why she knew that if she kept her heart, she was in love with him, mm-hmm. and it would have probably changed her goal.
Exactly.
And she didn't want that.
She didn't want that, right.
So they're both selfish.
Uh-huh.
And so she yanked her heart out and said, you will not make me, by love, change me and my goals.
Right.
So,
right.
Great point.
Yeah.
All right. So it was kind of funny, the whole comment that Emma made to Neil about, you're so judgy.
Don't be judgy.
Don't judgy.
Don't be judgy.
Yeah, it was just funny.
She does have the greatest one-liners.
Yeah.
She really does.
And King Xavier echoed a line about the Rumpelstiltskin line when he said, "You've earned my name." King Xavier said, "You've earned Henry by turning the straw into gold." So,
which is really, that's pathetic, actually,
yeah.
if you think about it. And he even said, when she said, you know, "I don't love your son," he goes, "Yeah, I don't blame you. There's really not a lot to love there." I mean, that's really, really crappy.
But love has never really been a high valued thing. I mean, even King George is like, you know, it's not about love. It's about, you know, gold and kingdoms
and power.
Right. So, you know, and if you,
how sad. And then by contrast, here we have, you know, King Xavier, who clearly thinks his son's kind of a loser. And then you've got, on the flip side, you got Rumpel, who is so, he loves his son so much and thinks so much of him that he's willing to sacrifice everything for him.
Right.
I mean, that's just, mm-hmm. it's awesome.
Yep. So I just wanted to ask a question. Was one of those swords that Emma, David was holding his sword.
His own sword, right.
His own sword. But the sword that Emma had or Neil had, I haven't had a chance to, Neil had a pirate sword. But I wonder if, I think you're right. I think Mary Margaret did give Mulan's magical sword back.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she did.
In trade for,
right.
That's right. Okay.
Because Mulan had to take it to go, she and Aurora had to go find Prince Philip.
Because it looked like when Neil swung at the fireball, it kind of bounced off.
Well, I think it's because he hit it and it, you know, deflected it. I don't think it's because magic deflected it.
Yeah.
He had the sword and the fireball was, you know, it's an actual ball of energy. And, of course, the sword kind of deflected it.
Initially, I wondered why they didn't push or do anything with Neil in that first little kind of altercation in the front part of the story.
Yeah, when David got flung outside
right.
and Emma got flung off to the
yep.
other, you know, towards the other door.
They just disappeared. Now, the second time in the back area, Cora made them.
She transported him.
Transported him somewhere.
To the forest.
The forest. Hopefully not the infinite forest. Otherwise, you know.
No, I think it was just somewhere outside where they'd been digging, close to where they'd been digging, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
So, and I recognized, Yeah, and the exchange between Neil and Gold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were just talking, and Gold said, I made a bad decision.
Made a bad choice.
Made a bad choice, and, you know, it's interesting. There's another theme of this is broken fathers and broken mothers, and they create broken kids. You know, and it just keeps going on and on. And, but, you know, the choices and the opportunities and that kind of a thing. And I think, I mean, that's another thing that, you know, David and Henry and all these different people are trying to help people make better choices. And, you know, Mary Margaret fell under the pressure.
But you know what I predict? I predict that Emma will be the one to pull her out of that funk.
Yeah.
And I think she's going to say, look, you had to do what you had to do to protect us, protect the family. We're right. a family. And you know what? I promised Rumpel that I would, or Gold, that I would save him. And we did. And you know what? The fact that you did this, I hope she actually says, look, you know, not great, but I'm at least glad that you did what you did, because now we can be safe from Cora. And Cora being the dark one would have meant absolute certain death for all of them.
Yeah. There was one little phrase that Mary Margaret said to Regina in the heart vault. She says, real love.
Real love, yeah.
Real love. And there's terms that, you know, we've heard true love and true love and all this, but real love. So obviously in that, the love that's been, you know, given, because even at the end, Regina was justifying her mother's love for her.
Right.
You know,
yeah, absolutely. And I think she was trying to convince herself that that was real love.
Right, right.
Not just Mary Margaret. She was trying to convince herself.
Yep. And again, I love this show. I mean, it's a drama show. It's a television show. But it's like, it makes you kind of think about what is love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is a mother's love and a father's love? And, you know, can you come back from bad choices? And what does it mean? And is love letting people do whatever they want? Or is love making the kid live a vicarious life that you never had? And all these different things, you know, what is love? What is real love? What is true love? You know, so pretty... pretty good question.
And then the interesting thing is that, you know, Regina trying to justify her mother's love was, again, convincing herself, because think about all the things that have been said and done up to this point. I mean, in the beginning, at almost the beginning, when Cora talked about the enchanted box, she even said, wait, what is the point of all this?
Right, right.
Because she knew it wasn't for her to be queen. So what exactly is the point of all this? And I think that was the second seed of doubt. Mary Margaret planted the first one in the diner. And then the second one was when Cora herself.
Right.
Actually, no, this would be the third or fourth seed, because in the clock tower, when Cora was talking about the fact that, you know, when Mary Margaret figured out that Cora killed her mother and that Regina could be, my daughter could be queen. And it was like, wait a minute. No, that's not it. Cause she is queen. Why do you keep wanting to do this? So there's more to it than that. I think that those seeds of doubt were taking root in Regina, and that's where, you know, why she kept trying to convince, cause she didn't want to believe the worst about her mother.
Yep. So the last two things in our notes, and then we're going to go into some emails and voicemails, is the one, you know, it hit me again, this whole, you know, I think fathers and sons, it's difficult. The relationship can be difficult, especially when the son grows up and all that. But a mother and a daughter, I think, you know, and kind of watching the difficulty, it's a difficult transition from a daughter who's in the home, who becomes a married woman and leaves the home.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough transition.
And
then growing up and just the kind of the reworking of, you know, a parent-child relationship. And these are tough things for even the most mature person to kind of readjust.
Well, I think what happens is, and I can speak from my own experience, is that, you know, your mom is your mom. Your mom takes care of you. Your mom loves you. Your mom does all these things for you. And then hopefully if she's taught you anything, when you get out on your own, it's not a shock and surprise and you're able to take care of yourself. It's those that I think where if they've done so much that and you don't seem to learn from it, that's where I think it's the hardest. It still is a difficult transition, though, even if your mother has taught you everything, you know, you need to know to survive and be, you know, self-sufficient human being out on your own, is that now that you are, you make choices and your mother sometimes doesn't agree with your choices and says, no, that's not how you do it. It's like, well, no, that's not how you do it. This is how I'm doing it. And that is why I think women do struggle with, I don't want to be just like my mom, but then they end up a lot of times just like their moms. And believe me,
DNA is hard to break.
DNA is very hard to break. But I'll tell you something. I said that when I was growing up, I will never be like my mother. I want to be more like my aunt. And in some respects, I am much more like my aunt. However, I hope that in certain things I am like my mom, because my mom is very strong and she's, you know, she's very determined. She's got her foibles. We all do. But there are definite qualities about my mom that I hope I'm like her, because I think they're good qualities. So you eventually reconcile that you do want to be like your mom.
Yep. But when Cora said, and I think we touched on it in the first thoughts, is, you know, you would have been enough. I think that right there is probably one of the most powerful lines. Mm-hmm. And
this would have been enough. You would have been enough.
Right.
That right there is her realizing that her choice for power was a bad one, and she should have chosen love.
Right.
Would have been a whole different story if she'd chosen love.
Yep. And
she could have had it.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that was the one decision. That was the one discussion that, you know, Rumpel really was turned upside down in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he thought he had it all figured out. He thought he was in control. And then all of a sudden she says, I want love. And he said, oh, I think I can give that to you.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible.
Yeah.
The dark one, you know, really falling for this woman. And he really loved her.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he didn't love Belle later. But no,
I think, again, yeah, he loved her, but I don't think he had the true love with her that I think he has with Belle.
Right.
Because if you compare the whole thing with, there was passion with Cora.
Right, right.
Which cannot and should not be confused with love.
Mm-hmm.
But if you listen to how he talked to Belle, he's flat out said, you make me want to be the best version of me. And no one's ever done that before.
Yep.
Cora certainly didn't want to make him be the best version of himself. She made him want to continue that power and get more of it, you know, it made him feel strong where Mila had made him feel so weak.
Right.
So I think there's that war, you know, in and of him with himself. And I think he did love Cora, but I think it was based more on passion than actual deep-seated, real, lasting love.
Yep. So we are, you know, for lack of a better term, a lot of people can look at all of us and see straw. But, you know, we're actually a lot more than that, because I think all of us have something special that we can give to others, to the world, and to ourselves. And I think when we look for that validation from a parent, from a spouse, from a friend, from something, from anyone, that's when we run into trouble. You know, we run after that. But the validation is, I have worth, even though it may seem like I'm straw, you know, I'm actually gold, because I have worth to everybody. And you just got to find out what that is and walk in it. Go do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have been enough. So maybe that's what we all need to hear to ourselves.
Yeah.
You're enough. You know, that's important. And then the final line that really kind of stood out is old Gold's, I did nothing. You know, and it's kind of like that guy in Hogan's Heroes. I see nothing. But it's like Rumpel, again, got off scot-free. The Teflon Rumpel Nothing stick to him. I didn't do anything. It's this magical.
I think that's his weakness, is that he doesn't want to be responsible for anything. So that's why he manipulates everyone else into doing stuff, because then he's not responsible for anything,
right.
Anything happening.
But
even
if
though
you...
he manipulated.
But what was funny is Cora manipulated him like he manipulated everybody else, and he never saw it coming.
No, he didn't.
She really, if anybody deserved to be the Dark One, it was Cora, because Cora's much more manipulative than him.
Well, even King Xavier saw that in her. He said, you know, your love is weakness. It's not suitable for a woman as hard as you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So even he recognized, and that was before she took her own heart out. Mm-hmm. So, wow.
Yes, yes. All right. So we're going to read through some emails and play some voicemails. Mm-hmm. So Michelle emailed and let us know that the Jolly Roger was hooked ship. And so thank you for that.
Yes.
Yep.
I figured that out after the fact.
So thank you much. Marilyn sent in some great photos of Robert from Paley Fest.
Yay.
So I'll be posting those. Thank you so much, Marilyn.
Yay.
And again, it was so cool to see the folks there at the Paley Fest. You know, I was telling Colleen that my favorite time at Paley Fest was out kind of chit-chatting on the sidewalk out in the front. Yeah. That was just really, everything else was cool, but that was
totally
neat.
Yeah.
That was really, yeah. Okay, this is from Holly from Wisconsin. Hey, Jeff and Colleen, wow, what an episode. Almost all of the actors on the show deserve to be nominated for Emmys after all the performances that they've been putting in the last few episodes. I agree.
Oh, me too.
Cora really knew what she wanted and how to get it after her run-in with the young Eva in Fairy Tale Land. Something tells me there's still more backstory there that we haven't heard about yet, and hopefully we will be able to see it in season 3. I agree. I think there is more in between Rumpel and Cora parting ways and forward. I really agree with you that Rumpel was ready to move on and wanted to look for someone to love again. And I really think he thought that Cora would be the one just because of how well they got along and kind of wanted the same thing. I think it surprised him that she actually asked him to teach her. I'm wondering if Cora was his first student. That's a very good point, Holly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
'Cause there's a lot more past stories, definitely, I think we're going to find. Or if he tried training others along the way. I'm not sure if there was an actual true love there between Cora or Rumpel, or maybe it was just one side of the relationship because his appearance didn't change. Yeah, and that's been kind of discussed here and there, as the kiss didn't make him change. And so maybe it was just kind of lust, you know. So,
yeah, that is a possibility.
And lusty kisses don't change, just true love kisses.
Right.
So maybe he loved Cora and she didn't love him. With Belle, he really loved her and just didn't want to voice it because of what happened between him and Cora. Back to the episode, Rumpel's anger and sorrow when he meets Cora before her wedding, and when she gives him her heart and tells him that she will marry Prince Henry, was a little tense. For a minute there, I thought he was going to try and take his anger out on her, and then him going back and saying that he will still go after her child. So that makes me wonder where was Rumpel during Cora's naming ceremony? Good point.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if they are no longer seeing each other, that he would not be there. That's my thought. So was he in hiding? Or was he locked up somewhere? Why I'm asking that is I'm wondering if Cora didn't tell Prince Henry about the king and the king about Rumpel, and that he threatened to take Regina away. But the king didn't know about Rumpel. He said that imp that you're going to run away with. So
right.
There was some knowledge going on there. not necessarily the deal that Cora made with him.
Right.
Just thinking back to one of the season one episodes where Henry was talking to Regina about how her mother knew a man with magic before they were married. Mm-hmm. The scenes in Storybrooke with Gold, Emma, Neil, Belle, Snow, and Charming were all very emotional. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was a good thing that the adults decided that Henry needed to be elsewhere and that Ruby would be the one to keep an eye on him. Good call.
Mm-hmm.
Henry really didn't need to see all the things that were going down in the shop. And so now we know where the candle went after Snow decided not to use it and save her mother. The ending when Cora dies in Regina's arms was heartbreaking. Regina's blaming Gold and Snow was perfectly understandable. Yeah.
Sure.
Gold's comment about Cora not doing Regina any favors was true as well. But, the timing of it, my gosh.
It was a major dig.
Yeah. The war is now most certainly on, and I don't think it will end anytime soon. I'm really wondering when Regina is going to find out about Neil and that he's Henry's father and also Rumpel's son. And Rumpel being Henry's grandfather, maybe that will make Regina think about what she does. But then again, maybe not. She could be out for blood, and it doesn't matter what the reaction, what the relation anyone may have. She wants her revenge. One other thing or theory that I came up with is while rewatching Manhattan and the Queen is dead before the Miller's daughter, it may be a bit of a stretch, but here it is. I don't think it was the Blue Fairy who told August that Neil was Balefire. Remember, August raced off. Maybe he somehow got taken to Neverland and met up with Bay, and they got to know each other slightly. But then with the curse, August forgot about that for a short time until he saw Neil again with Emma in Tallahassee. Just throwing it out there. Time to wrap this up. Looking forward to hearing more of your and all the listeners' thoughts on this episode. Big love to everyone. Holly from Wisconsin.
Thanks, Holly.
Thank you, Holly, so much.
I gotta say, and I had a couple things to think about, but the one that's just for some reason sticking out of my head is Regina. Regina, understandably, is blaming Gold and Snow for what happened to her mother, and technically she's right. She gets it. But I guess what my question is, so Cora took her own heart out, kept it away, locked up in a box, so she wouldn't get hurt. Did Regina do the same? Or did Cora take Regina's heart out?
Mm. Yeah.
And put it in a box?
Mm-hmm.
Because think about the difference between Regina when she was with Daniel and Regina after Cora killed Daniel. Totally different person.
Yep.
So Cora was very much a different person before she took the heart out. She was pretty cold-hearted, but she wasn't heartless until after she did take her heart out. And then she was very heartless. So I find it interesting and wonder if, in fact, Regina's heart is still in her body. Just a thought.
Yeah.
And something in Holly's email prompted that. But yeah, as far as the Blue Fairy and August running away to Neverland, I'm trying to think of when did he run off? I mean, he ran to Thailand.
Right.
But, and he talked about being in Thailand, but
as a
little boy, I don't recall him running off. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But I mean, if you're running around and it is accessible, I mean,
right.
Anyway,
but again, and here's the interesting thing. So that brings up a really good point. We're presuming based on the things that have been said that Bay ended up in Neverland before he ended up in real world. So if that's the case, how'd he get to real world?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe Lady knows.
I don't know.
All right. So I don't want to go through this right now, but we have what I would consider one of the probably deepest thinkers in our listenership, and his name is Manny. And Manny is a dude after my own heart because he loves to wrestle with things. And I remember there's a few people early on that, you know, would watch the first couple of episodes of Once Upon a Time and ask questions like, there's another guy named David that says, how can they get food? We never see any food delivery. How can this happen? And they can't sustain it and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm the one that kind of says, well, it's just, you know, suspension of disbelief, and they're delivering, but you don't know. And that kind of a thing. But Manny has sat down and thought about the whole time stuff. And he's used clues from the show to kind of create this whole, basically, it's a Magna Carta of the time frame and how time all matches for Once Upon a Time. So mm-hmm. he sent me this email. There's a lot here. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a blog post with it and post it up, and then I will put a link to it probably in this post, not today, but at some point, and then I'll kind of tweet about it and all this stuff. And but it is pretty in-depth, but he has done his homework, so thank you very much.
Yes, thank
Mr. you, Mr. Manny. So here are a couple of voicemails. Here's the first one.
Hey, Jeff and Colleen, it's Dave from Michigan. I wanted to call because I had a theory that would throw a lot of other people's theories up in the air. Right now, a lot of people are saying that they think that May is Peter Pan because he's been to other lands before and he knew Hook. And I've heard the reason that they don't think he's just a lost boy is because if he's going to be from the other land, he should, you know, he's the main character, he's his father's son, he should be Peter Pan. I had a thought while I was watching this week's episode. Well, actually, it was probably about 5 minutes after the episode was over, I started thinking about everything. I think what's going to happen, and this is just my theory, that at the end of the season, and one of the final two episodes, the fighting between the families is going to be so over the top that they're going to be focused so much on each other, and Hook is going to come back from New York, and he's going to take Henry on the Jolly Roger and use one of the beans that Ben will know is working, and he will take him back to Neverland. And Henry will be Peter Pan. And when they realize this at the end of the episode, it will be the catalyst for the beginning of season three for all of them to have to work together to get Henry back from Hook, finally fulfilling the promise that they made over a year ago when they first mentioned Hook, saying that he was going to be even worse than Rumpelstiltskin. And I think that maybe that will lead to something where Rumpelstiltskin goes with them to Neverland and maybe he finds his doom there or something along those lines, or his undoing or whatever. And I think this could lead to a lot of a lot more story for season three and whole new landscapes for them to explore. And a lot of other stuff, I think it would be cool. So that was my theory. But while I've got you on the phone, I'll also say this week's episode was awesome. I think my favorite episode, and quite the Greek tragedy. I might call back later if I get a chance to watch it a couple more times and pick up on the little things that we like to talk about on this one, on this podcast. So have a good day, guys. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. I like the theory. I like it a lot. I think it has great potential and a lot of merit to it. Henry could technically be Peter Pan. He may not be. I still don't know. I mean, Bay may be Peter Pan, but I don't think so. I kind of think he really is one of the Lost Boys, or he just ended up there somehow and met Peter Pan. So I think we might meet Peter Pan season three. But I do like the, or at the end here, and I do agree with him. I believe Hook is going to come back. He's going to find his way back to Storybook somehow, and that's going to be real interesting. No, really interesting.
No, what do you mean?
Hook's going to find his way back to Storybook.
He is. And
Hook's not in Storybook. He's in New York.
Oh, God.
He's
it,
locked
got
up in
it,
the basement in New York.
Well,
he's going to find a way out. He's going to find his way back to Storybook. He's going to kidnap Henry. I'm on board. I think it's a great it's a great theory.
This may have never been mentioned before, and it may have, but what if Hook, Killian Jones, what if that's Hook Jr.?
Yeah, it could be.
And what if Hook's father is still in Neverland?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the Hook we've been kind of waiting to see, the mean, crotchety, whatever,
mm-hmm.
what if he's there? And what if they run? What if at some point, you know, the question is, you know, who's that? Well, that's Hook. Well, I thought you were Hook. No, I'm Hook Jr. You know, and then we see this, there, but yeah. So
as bad as he is, I think that Hook is going to be a baddie. He's going to be the new replacement because. Think about it. Cora's gone.
Right,
Regina's
right.
going to get mad and she's going to try and get revenge, but she's also going to be held back by the fact that Henry will not be happy if, again, Henry's not going to be happy if his mom kills his grandma.
Yeah.
That's not going to bode well for him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
see, okay.
I don't think, think that's what's going to happen.
Right.
I think Hook's going to be the new baddie.
Okay.
I think Regina will still be mean and nasty, but she'll struggle with it because she's gonna have a tough time being bad and doing evil things when she knows Henry's gonna be watching all this.
Yep. All right. So let us play the next voicemail.
Okay.
Hi guys, it's Brad from Ohio. I may have to split my thoughts into two phone calls this week, so I just want to apologize because I don't want to take up too much of your time. I only have one comment that I'd like to make about the Miller's daughter, and I'll call back with a theory that I'd like to share. When Snow said at the end of The Queen is Dead, I'm going to kill Cora, I kind of rolled my eyes and said, yeah, right. You know, they have set her character up to always fight for the side of good, no matter the cost. So the reveal that Snow actually goes through with it and does it in such a cold way was shocking to me. To play on Regina's emotions and then use them to kill her own mother makes it so much worse, too. And then the fact that the heart alone may have changed Cora for the good. I mean, I'm sure people started this episode angry at Regina, but then ended up, you know, possibly feeling sorry for it. And again, people may say that Regina was hated and blamed for Snow for ruining their life for so long that it was probably about time Snow gave her a real reason to hate her. Above anything Regina can do to get back at her, the thing that will crush Snow the most is going to be her own conscience and how she used Regina and did exactly what she would do or Rumpelstiltskin would have done. Now, a new standard for the show has been set because if you can turn Snow White into Snow Dark, then no one's character or morale is safe at this point. And now that we know that everyone is related, how long is this battle going to go on? With Gold and Emma and Regina all possessing magic, and now Cora dead, the playing field is even. And each person is tied in with Henry somehow, so I believe he will be the key factor here. Now, how much more bloodshed is going to happen between these two families before someone just says it's enough? Magic has been used to gain power, and the price of that magic, as we have seen, has been paid for many times. The only way things can truly be resolved, I believe, is if magic is removed. Now, the real enemy here is not Regina, it's not Cora, it's not Rumpelstiltskin. The real enemy is magic itself. Because as long as magic is available, change is never going to happen. Now, this really mirrors our own lives and how power, you know, however we may achieve it, can destroy and lead us down a path of consequences or decisions that we will regret for the rest of our lives. Now, some people might not give this show a second thought because, you know, it's about fairy tales and magic. But the underlining theme has a powerful message with real-life situations that we can learn from if we just open up our eyes and look beyond the fairy tale. And that is why I love this show. Now I'm going to call you guys right back with my new theory.
Man, Brad is awesome.
He is. I love his voicemail.
Because he knew exactly when it was going to end.
I know.
So that's perfect. Okay, the only thing I great thoughts,
absolutely,
for sure.
Absolutely.
The one thing I would add is it actually kind of part of what you were saying is it sounded like the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Yeah, a little bit.
That kind of, yeah.
This feud started over misunderstanding, miscommunications, and now the person who kind of started all of it is out of the picture, so it should be dropped. There should be forgiveness, and there may not be.
And the point he made, too, is that when something is passed down generation after generation, you know, the explanation probably gets longer and more stuff's and involved and all this kind of stuff. Now, I'm not saying that Snow didn't make a mistake, but then you start to peel back the layers and say, well, what did Cora have to do with it? You know, all that. We've discussed that before. Right. But anyway, this definitely great thought, but I just wanted to bring in that Hatfield and McCoy thought. It's what it kind of sounded like to me. So going back and forth and all that. Okay, here is his second voicemail.
All right. Now I'd like to talk about my theory, and I'm kind of excited to see what you guys think. The idea that Bay is Peter Pan is really gaining momentum now, and I believe that the writers want us on this trail so that they can pull the rug right out from underneath us. This show is slowly leading us to make this conclusion, which is why I want to make a U-turn here. Now, I know everyone's knee-jerk reaction is to say this theory is crazy, so I'm going to tell you guys to brace yourself. But what I believe, or what I'm thinking, is what if Killian Jones is actually Peter Pan? And here's some points that I think may be leading in that direction. In Tallahassee, Hook makes the observation that Emma doesn't want to abandon her son like the way she was abandoned. She asks him how he would know that, and he says that he spent many years in Neverland, the home of the Lost Boys, and that they all share the same look in their eyes. And he says it's the look you get when you've been left alone. Now, the way he speaks about them, it's almost like they mean something to him and not as antagonistic. So usually, you know, when people can understand a look in your eye, it's because they have experienced it themselves. So has Hook experienced being left alone? He doesn't go by the name James, but instead Killian Jones. And, you know, you can look up any story about Peter Pan. The name Killian never shows up. So it's curious that the writers chose that. Most adaptations of Hook have him with long or curly hair. Yet Killian's hair is short, just like Peter Pan. It seems like he knew all about Neverland in the episode The Crocodile when he found the bean. He tells me with confidence that we're going to Neverland. You know, it's almost like he had been there before. Killian Jones does not come across as a disgusting pirate, but instead a person most women find very appealing to the eyes. Peter Pan's name has never been mentioned by Hook or anyone else in the show, and I find that odd because Hook is never going to bring up his, you know, enemy, Peter Pan. That seems weird to me. In every version of Peter Pan, he has his iconic green V-neck shirt, while Hook is wearing his red coat and lace jabot around his neck. So is Killian's V-neck coat, you know, just so that women can stare at his chest? Or is it just a clever ruse to throw us off the trail? Rumpelstiltskin cut off his hand, which has always been attributed to Peter Pan. And finally, it would not be the first time a character has played two roles. Red was the wolf. Rumpelstiltskin was the beast, the crocodile, and the fairy godmother. So this is not out of the realm of what they have already shown us. But if Killian Jones is in fact Peter Pan, it would be memorable. And as Rumpelstiltskin says, every story needs a memorable detail. Thanks, guys.
Brad. What?
I love it.
Yeah, that's a great theory.
Yeah, it
and
is.
It does.
It does hold merit.
It does, it and it does merit. Fit in with the show.
Yeah,
and
having people play dual roles, and how would that work? That you know, again, Bay says he knows Hook, right?
Mm-hmm.
If in fact, think this through, let's even take care of this even further, because I'm starting to really, I mean, look, I love Dave's theory, and it's still a great one. I still think there's merits to parts of it.
Yep.
Hook being Peter Pan makes a lot more sense, because if Hook really was Hook, Captain Hook, who hated Peter Pan, and Bay was Peter Pan, in New York, why didn't he go after Peter Pan?
Mm.
He could have gone after the crocodile. And then gone after Peter Pan. I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He didn't even seem to like, I still think that there's, cause he was watching, could have killed two birds with one stone.
Right.
And he's right. He's never mentioned Peter Pan at all. It's all about Hook. It's all about Hook. I mean, Rumpel.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that idea a lot. I think there's a you know, a good solid combination of the two theories, and that's why I think that Bay knows Hook, because they were both, you know, Bay was a lost boy, Hook is Peter Pan, and that's how that kind of happened.
No, I like it. I like the U-turn aspect because, mm-hmm. you know, even though you know, the whole doctor, you know, side story was kind of linear and we knew exactly where we were heading and it headed there. I think most of the time they do like these kind of switcheroos.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that makes a really interesting story, is that you think someone is someone and then it's somebody else.
Right.
You know, I remember first time I ever heard, I think that Red is, Ruby is, you know, the wolf. I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean?
And then we saw the episode and it
Right,
did.
Right. And so, anyway, yeah, great stuff. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for all the great voicemails and emails. And thanks for letting us kind of taking a second look at the episode and kind of discussing deeper themes that we see. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different take on things, but there are lots of other choices that really kind of take a microscope and look at different things. Nothing wrong with that, but it's just I don't want to rehash it. I'd rather talk about things that really kind of resonate with us. So thanks for letting us do that and for listening in. And, you know, we've had some great tweets about people introducing this podcast to other people. Thank you so much for that. Thanks for all the folks that retweet and tweet while they're listening and bringing up different points that resonate with them, and letting Twitter and using hashtags and all that kind of thing. It really is helping, and we are growing. And I want to say hello to all the new listeners that are listening to us. It's growing all the time, mm-hmm. and we thank you for that. I thank the folks that left iTunes reviews. So it encourages us so much, because, you know, when you make a change to something, it's always worrisome. Is this going to be bad? Is everyone not going to like it? And it's tough to make changes, but, you know, we felt that it was necessary, and we appreciate all the understanding about that. And, you know, things have rebounded and we're growing and we're so thankful for that. So a new episode tomorrow. Welcome to Storybrooke.
Yeah, and
so a lot of interesting things will be coming our way then. And so, yeah, thanks so much, everyone. However you found us, however you're listening. We are on iTunes, so you can subscribe to us. You can rate and review our podcast, and we really appreciate that. And I want to send big love out to everyone. And it's a great time. The show is really picking up steam, and I feel invigorated. And I know Colleen is definitely more engaged to it, and we're kind of back on track. It was really nice seeing folks at the Paley Fest, and so it's all good. And so I hope everybody has a great week, and we will talk to everybody soon.
Yep.
See Thanks. You guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for being a part of this podcast. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. This is Wayne Henderson, the voice of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. And if you want to know more about how my voice acting services might work for you, check out MediaVoiceOvers.com. And now, all of us here at Roni's Own Media and MediaVoiceOvers.com look forward to sharing the love and enjoyment of the Once Upon a Time TV show next time. Take care.
What planet have we landed on?
It is the fairy tale planet, Lord Vader.
We will take all the inhabitants prisoner. Who is this old woman?
Widow Lucas.
Widow what?
Widow Lucas.
Lucas. That sounds familiar. Well, Widow Lucas, you have quite a pretty granddaughter. Hey, granddaughter, I'm actually single. You can check me out on galacticmatch.com. So, old woman, sorry, Widow Lucas, what's your story?
Nearly 60 years ago, I was a child with 6 older brothers, big as oak trees, all of them veterans of the Second Ogre's War. I was supposed to be asleep, but I crawled out on the roof to watch and lay down in the thatch. They had the beast surrounded, the 7 of them. They stabbed it with the splintered end, but it didn't matter. It tore their throats so fast that not a one of them got a chance to scream or pray.
That's a long story. Wow. Okay, all of you here, we can do this the easy way, in which you give up all your weapons and board my ship, or we can do it the hard way. Widow Lucas, what are you pointing at me?
Silver-tipped arrow.
A silver-tipped, I have the Force. I am a Dark Lord of the Sith. And I have this lightsaber. So what you gonna do?
You shot me with an arrow.